Okay, now we're good. All right. So what we're going to kind of picking up from last week about trials tonight is going to be on wisdom and faith. Kind of got how we're supposed to make it through trials. And what I did that's a little different from that sheet was just a lot of what was in the original sheet came from James. So just went through kind of the book of James, and we're going to do kind of an outline of James as just, okay, this is a very kind of succinct, focused theology of trials that James gives. And you're going to kind of work through it. We're going to start here. We're probably going to read, if you have your Bibles, you can open to James. We're going to kind of work our way through. We're not going to read the whole thing, but it starts right away, right after he says, consider it pure joy. Consider it great joy whenever you face trials of many kinds. The very next thing he says in verse 5 is, if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He's a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. And just real quick on that, the ask and believe versus doubt. It's not that you should never have any doubts. That would be impossible. especially when you're in a trial. That's part of what makes trials so difficult is I don't know what to do here. But the wisdom that he says to ask for is kind of the definition of this is the application of God's righteousness in the circumstances that you're going through. So it can be simply should I do this or not? Give me wisdom, God. Should I do this or shouldn't I? But it's you when you ask what God is interested in. Is taking it a little deeper to God. What does your righteousness look like in this circumstance? That's the wisdom I need. I need to know how to not fall off the path of following you, walking in your steps, doing what you've called me and redeemed me to do. And if I'm not careful, this trial is going to give me good reason to do exactly that. I'm going to go in another direction, and I know that about myself. So, God, how do you want me to stay and be faithful to do the things that you've called me to do? That's the wisdom that God says, come and ask for, and I'll give it freely. Give it as a gift of grace, not based on how well you made the decision yesterday, not based on how holy you're feeling right now, or... are peaceful or presence of the fruit of the Spirit. It's this wonderful invitation. Just come and ask. I'm committed. And if you've ever gotten where you're in a relationship with somebody that you're longing for God to work and change that person, and it's a long time coming. You don't see it coming, and you can start to think and function like I want this almost more. I got to convince God to get over here and get on board with this. I want it so badly. I feel like it's so right. And then it at some point God just kind of knocks you upside the head and says, really? You care more about this? You think you care more about this than I do? And it's this incredibly freeing kind of realization to get to that place of remembering that actually God, no, you love this. You love. You're the one who's drawing me in. I'm not drawing you into anything. It's the other way around. I need to be drawn in. I don't understand how incredibly deep and committed your love is. And that's getting James's the encouragement is kind of understand that that's how God gives wisdom. You don't have to convince God, hey, do you see the mess I'm in? Hey, do you see the trial that I'm going through? A little help here. I really do want to do the right thing, and my problem is I can't get a response from you. That's not the case. God's perspective is, I give wisdom without finding fault. It's completely based on my grace. It's completely based on my love for you. I'll give it freely. But don't doubt. And the don't doubt does not mean, you know, you better make up your mind and kind of set your teeth and go for it. It means don't keep wavering and kind of giving doubt the run of your life and your heart. Well, because what that is that's a shift back to the circumstances. I'm going to figure out based on the circumstances how this thing's going to work out. So that's James. Ask God, ask for wisdom, believe, don't doubt. This next little section, I think a lot of times we take James apart and you get these little nuggets. But just the value of looking at the flow of what he does. The very next thing after he says, believe, don't doubt, ask God and he'll give it to you. The very next verse is, the brother in humble circumstances, okay, ought to take pride in his high position. And in case you're wondering, well, okay, humble circumstances, he contrasts it with this. But the one who is rich should take pride in his low position. And this is where we start getting into the some of the, okay, God, is this really, where you go with this? This is framed in economic realities, because that's exactly what the trials actually were. If you're a believer in this church, it meant pretty certain economic ruin early on, because if you were a Jewish believer, you were excommunicated from fellowship at the synagogue. You were cast out, and you lose what little community support. And this is kind of the same if you think of if anyone knows Muslims from Islamic nations. When they make a profession of faith, you are cut off from every means of economic support that community and that culture had. That's what our brothers and sisters in Pakistan. The challenge is, if you're a believer, you have zero legal rights. So if someone takes your property, there's no recourse. I mean, there's absolutely no recourse. So this was what the trials that the early church was facing, kind of day in day out issue, had to do with poverty, loss of resource, loss of power. So just a question, is that still the reality of the cost of following Jesus?
Can be.
Depends on where you are. Also depends on how seriously you follow what he calls you to do. I mean, there is no way to take seriously the call to share with your brother and sister who's in need and come to church on Sunday and hear that you've got brothers and sisters in Congo who are starving and all they need is someone to share their resource. And if you say, okay, well, that's what it means to follow Jesus, it won't be long, will it, before God, this is a trial now. I'm out of economic power and resource and ability. Now, you get, this is good. This gets good because James really doesn't beat around the bush. And remember, this is basic first generation Christian discipleship. Okay, this is not after you've had a couple passed on from generation to generation, and now we're going to get to the really hardcore stuff. This is brand. I mean, Jesus just went up to heaven. So everybody that's a Christian is a baby Christian, just getting this stuff kind of poured into them. That's good to know. All right, so boast, take the one who's in humble circumstances ought to take pride in his high position. The one who's in rich should take pride in his low position, because he will pass away like a wildflower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls, its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich man will fade away even while he goes about his business. This is actually, James is setting up kind of a case for, okay, you're in trial, I'm telling you to ask for wisdom. Now, I'm going to address some of the core issues that you're going to have to be receptive to and be on your guard against. And I don't think it's crazy that this is where he starts kind of his preamble to, here's the wisdom that's coming. Guess what? It's going to involve your checkbook. The wrestle. It's going to involve your checkbook. It's going to involve kind of your attitude about that, your position in that, and kind of where your heart goes. And he actually, we're going to see, he that theme kind of runs through James as an issue for what is it? How do I operate with your wisdom when I'm facing trials? All right, verses 12 to 18. He kind of lays out kind of an either or, endurance versus temptation. Just going to read this here. Blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. To the one who endures, a crown of life. Okay. But when tempted, here's the opposite. Endurance, and then on the other hand, temptation. When tempted, no one should say, God is tempting me. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he tempt anyone. But each one's tempted when by his own evil desire he's dragged away and enticed. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. So there's kind of two options here when you're in trials. And you're asking for wisdom, you're trying to figure this stuff out. One is endurance. God, I'm going to endure in it. And what you promise is a crown of life. Or, when there's trials, you know, it just becomes an opportunity for temptation. It just starts coming out of the woodwork. I got to get out of here. This can't be the way I'm meant to live my life. And that's when the temptations just start coming in, and there's this warning. Okay, if you end up there, you don't get a crown of life. What you end up with is death. Is the result. So James kind of put in a good way, in an alarming way, I'm going to paint this in pretty stark contrast. Life or death. Endurance or falling into temptation and getting snared and caught up in that. Okay. And then he goes pretty quickly here in verse 19, he addresses our state of mind. When he's there. We're not going to read through it, but the first thing he says is to guard against anger. Man's anger does not bring about the righteousness. It doesn't get any more practical than this kind of, okay, God, wisdom in trials. Guard against anger. That's your mindset. If there's anger, it should be a red flag. I'm moving in the wrong direction. I mean, just very, very, very clean cut, simple, I'm moving in the wrong direction. And then he says, okay, so guard against anger, but then accept the word of God, humbly accept the word of God planted in you, which can save you. And when he says accept it, he makes no, he very quickly jumps, don't just give it a sense, oh yeah, I believe this, do what it says. Okay, accept the word, so guard against anger, accept the word, and then through faith, there should be obedience that flows. God, what is it that you're calling me to? And then why does James, right here in this preamble of here's how you deal with trials, why does he jump immediately to this? Oh, and by the way, if anyone considers himself religious, yet does not keep a tight rein on his tongue, he deceives himself, his religion is worthless. Religion that our God and Father accepts as pure and faultless as this. To look after the orphan and the widow in their distress, and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. There is a look to wisdom, and this is another theme that he's going to kind of develop here. But the look is mercy, not anger, but mercy being shown, and particular. Mercy towards the most vulnerable and the most broken in society, the orphan and the widow. That's, I mean, you kind of get the sense that, okay, God, when I came and asked you for, I'm struggling here through this trial. I need some real help. I need some wisdom. Okay, care for the orphan and the widow in their distress. Let your, you know, make listen to the word and obey. I don't know. Does that? How's that strike you? It's a little upside down. I mean, if you're in New City long enough, you're like, oh, it strikes me like what we hear every Sunday. But it's, you know, I'm going through. God, I need some real answers here. I've got a crisis on my hands. I do not see.
It strikes me like you're just compounding the problem. So, like, the answer is to make it worse. I mean, as I'm thinking through this, that's what I'm thinking. Like, wouldn't that just make it messier?
Yeah, more trials to boast in, right?
It does get your eyes off yourself. I was just saying it, but it does help me get my eyes off myself, because it's when I'm drowning, it's usually when I'm looking at what's happening to me. I look out and hear what we heard this morning. It's like, oh, Shavkat, yeah, mm-hmm. Orphans. Mm-hmm. It's not all about what I'm going through. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, perspective. Yep. Yep. Really perspective.
And if you get this, going back to last week, so God's plan is, I want to use trials to mature you. And the maturing is not... It's not a picture of you getting less and less dependent on God and just more and more just kind of self, you know, I'm just righteous in myself, in kind of how I don't need help anymore. I mean, that's kind of the, if you think about the American way. If your business matures, you know, you become less and less at risk, right? You become more and more successful with a bigger and bigger bank account and... hey, you know how to ride all the little, you know, everybody else is panicking and freaking out, and you're just kind of steady and going. And God's picture of maturity is you become more and more dependent on me. You become more and more connected to my spirit. You actually become more and more useful in this world, which does mean... The mess is, you know, I learned to walk into more and more mess, and not as I've got all the answers and I'm going to fix it all. I'm here with the mercy that God has given me to let it flow. I mean, I know it doesn't sound, that's, you're still going.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's all good. Hey, I have a question.
Yes.
You used the word use.
Useful, I mean, the actual presence of righteousness is what James means in chapter 2. Useful as in, you see someone poor who comes and is hungry, you actually share food with them. You don't just say, I wish you well, stay warm and well fed. You know, that's, you've touched my heart, you've inspired me. It's, no, actually, here. I see the need. It's hey, you're lonely? Come on over. Come to my house and hang out with my family.
Is that a definition of kindness? I mean, that's useful. It's an action. It's not just a warm feeling. Yeah.
That's right. And that's really, this is, so if this is kind of the, you know, if you kind of look at the book of James this way, he kind of now he's just gonna go kind of rototill these themes.
You know, I mean, look at Galatians, the fruit of the Spirit. There's this one in there that always seems kind of interesting to think about, and it's called long suffering. It's not a bad thing, according to my Bible, because it's a fruit of the Holy Spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's if we're walking. Part of what is happening is that there's developing us in us this character. of suffering. It's part of the package.
Amen.
See, I think the other part of this is that, you know, preceding this part of the widows and the orphans is to be doers, not hearers.
That's right.
And I think part of what the widows and orphans is, and being doers is, the widows and orphans are there.
That's right.
We're kind of on the trial, but okay, may well about our finances, but it's a trial. Widows and orphans, they're there.
That's right.
Amongst us.
That's right.
So there's ample opportunity for you to be a doer.
That's right.
Not just a hearer.
That's right.
Because they're there.
Yep.
Always.
And I mean, here's the good, the God's provision in this. So when you're in trial, like the widow and the orphan, their life state status is trial, by definition. Especially in this culture, but in this culture today, it's my life status is trial, hardship, economic hardship. It's the reality. So what happens when God moves his people to take care of the widow and the orphan? There's relief. There's provision. What happens when you're in a place of trial and God moves his people to come in and help? Same thing. There's relief. There's provision. God, you it's not that you don't care about the need that is being exposed. That's not the message here is not just get down and dirty and it doesn't make any sense, but that's just the path, you know. It's actually okay, here's what's gonna move and begin to set things right and bring the relief and bring the goodness and deliverance in the trials. But that process, this is such a critical thing. God, who's going to be a part of this? There isn't anybody else. It's us as your people that are going to be a part of this. So, yeah, I really, when I'm going through it, I need you to remind me what the focus is, what the priority is, because this is where kind of James now is going to start really wailing in a good way. There's such a propensity to get off focus and to shift to, I got to get myself out of the pain of this trial, and so now James, the next three chapters, he just says, okay, here's some things you really got to watch out for. You're asking for wisdom. You're asking God, okay, show me how you want me to walk this stuff out. Well, here's some things you really have to watch out for, kind of as pitfalls. And the first thing is, He jumps right into this with the favoritism. When you show favor to someone who's rich, what is that? It's replacing, if you kind of read that whole section, you replace mercy, identification with the poor, you replace that with envy and favoritism towards the rich. You know, my life would be so much easier if I had what they've got. And maybe by association I'll get what they've got. You know, they seem to be, this was a constant, this is in Psalm, someone's going to have to help me out here. What's the, I envied the rich, I envied the wicked, because they seem to have no care.
73.
Yeah. This is a very common struggle. I look out, I see the wicked seem to have no care. They see, you know, everybody else is struggling. They just seem to be like, whatever. And their wealth, their power is there. And, man, if I could just somehow get that. Where this is, I think, in our context here, what's so hard about this is there's a lot of churches that really have an excess of wealth and seem to be able to function and live out their calling without a lot of the struggles. I mean, at least on the surface, it seems like, man, you guys are just kind of, you know, your biggest problems are, you know, your kids rebellious, and that is a big problem. I mean, Trust me. It is a big problem. That's right. But, you know, but it just seems like, okay, but we've got, you know, we can get counseling for that. Or we'll send them to a better school. Or, you know, you say, yeah, you definitely, but it just seems like the financial resources enable you to kind of maneuver through this stuff. You're not, and so it's a, there's a, there is a, I think, a challenge in this culture where Christianity has become so synchronistic with kind of the American
dream.
Yeah, dream, that it's hard to, sometimes you feel like, can this be right? That I'm not supposed to envy the rich? It seems like this is so much, this is preached. If God is, you know, I think, Tom, you mentioned it last week, you know, a sign of God's blessing is, or of his yes, open doors, is the path of least resistance. You know, that's the, hey, you want to know if God's in it, he's going to bless it. And, you know, we forget that God's blessing of Abraham, you know, right after his first great pronouncement of, I'm going to bless you, what was the very next thing that happened?
Famine.
Famine. And now I'm in Egypt, and I'm watching out for this Pharaoh, this king that is going to go after my wife. And I gotta try to maneuver that. So, but we live in a culture that says you can avoid a lot of mess if you plan your finances the right way, if you're responsible enough with them, if you work hard, if you kind of jump in the right opportunities. Here's all this way to get yourself kind of at this level. And you know what James appears to be saying is, hey, be careful when you're going through trials to not look at the wealthy and kind of in your heart say, that's what I'm talking about. You know, that's what they got going on, we need some of that here.
This person can fund my ministry, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so therefore I'm going to show preference to this person. Mm-hmm. Which, if you read the scripture, in some ways I don't have the answer for this, but some ways is offensive to God. You know what James is saying, but yet it's everywhere.
Right.
And we've seen it over and over and over,
right,
and over, because this person has the resources to fund what I want to accomplish. Right or wrong, or good or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so the human, the fleshly tendency in our hearts is to go, we need to bring this person in, mm-hmm, so that they can resource.
That's right.
What I want to do. And,
that's right.
It's hard to back away from that desire in our flesh and really say, God, I just trust you. I mean, how many people out there where they're like CT studies, I'm just going to give everything away, go to Africa and have nothing,
right,
you know. He's one of the few.
That's right.
One of the few, but it's a very hard thing to deal with to say, I'm not going to show preference to this person,
mm-hmm,
because even though they have the resources, I'm going to trust God.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a reality. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna.
Well, a couple stacks on top of that, I think. First of all, these people are blessed with resources for a purpose, and it's
right,
that purpose, and understand that purpose, where they fall over themselves most of the time, you know, because they don't discern between, you know, even the people who are Christians, who go to church and feel like they're, you know, giving away what you have is, that's hard. And, you know, bringing people into a situation where Christ can reveal himself to that person and their understanding can be broadened about why they've been blessed with these resources is mm-hmm. part of the work we do. You mm-hmm. know, that's a critical aspect of what we're doing. And, you know, we're having these kind of discussions right now about donors and bringing them in and having them serve a purpose. And I agree with you. I think if you bring these people in and you sit them on a throne in the corner and treat them differently, that's one thing. But if you bring them in and dunk them in the mess,
right.
that's
right.
what we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
And so, you know, I'm just...
That's right. But this change, so this what this the practical application of this that we've done in ministries is we've had, you know, invitations. Would you like us to bring an NFL superstar to come and talk to your kids? No. I mean, unless they want to just come in and not kind of rah rah rah. Look at what I've achieved. Because the message 9 times out of 10 is, if you go with God, look what you can.
Right.
Look what you can do too.
Gospel.
And it's just like no. What is needed is demonstrate the value and dignity that these kids have because they're made in God's image.
Amen.
Right where they're at. And so Jesus, I mean, he did it. I came and I took on the form of the least. I was born into an ethnic group that was at one of its lowest points politically. You know, I did that. That was totally on purpose, because there is, I mean, what he said. You know, find it here in chapter two. You know, he says, "Listen, my dear brothers, has God not chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom that He promised those who love Him? But you've insulted the poor. Okay." Is it not the rich who are exploiting you? Are they not the ones who are dragging you into court? Are they not the ones who are slandering the noble name of Him to whom you belong? And then he says, if you really keep the royal law found in Scripture, love your neighbor as yourself, you're doing right. But if you show favoritism, you sin, and you're convicted by the law as lawbreakers. And listen what he puts this, the sin of that kind of, the inclination of my heart to show favoritism. You know, whoever keeps the whole law stumbles at just one point is guilty of breaking all of it. For he who said, do not commit adultery and do not commit murder, also said, do not commit murder. If you do not commit adultery but do commit murder, you've become a lawbreaker. I mean, that's a pretty heavy duty grouping to put this where he's making his point. Look, this is sin. If you show favoritism, it is sin. And you were set free from that. You've actually been, and this is where it says, speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom, because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who has not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And in kind of the practical application of this is more than just about my, you know, am I saved by mercy? Am I saved by works? He's not talking about what makes you justified before God. This isn't a theology of justification that he's working on here. It's practical wisdom when you're going through trials. Get your heart moved towards God. Help me walk this out. Mercy towards folks that are in need. If somebody, you know, if my kid comes and says, I'm struggling with, you know, this class, I'm failing this class, I'm not going to make it out of high school, you know, what should I do? You know, and you just laugh as a parent. Well, you could start by doing your homework. You know, that would be a good, you know, let's call your teacher. Oh, your teacher said you haven't turned in homework all semester. Well, let's do the homework. Oh, no, you don't understand. You know, it's just like, well, okay, I don't know what to tell you that you asked for. This is not hard. I think that's sometimes how God's view is. You really want to know how to keep perspective in this trial? Okay, love mercy. Don't guard your heart against this favoritism. And we turn around, whoa, hold on. What does that have to do with anything? You know, come on, I need something really good, something really practical here. I'm telling you what's going to help give you the perspective and the maturity. And we all know, because what happens is, if I'm going to show mercy like that, I'm going to immediately be depleted of anything I've got in myself to do this with, which is going to lead me to, okay, Lord, help. I don't get this. I need your grace. I need your strength. I don't love. Shoot, I don't love that way. Not when I'm in pain. Help, help. And that's kind of, I think James' whole point is, that's exactly what God is waiting for, and what He responds to. You want wisdom. You really want to know how to make it through these trials. Let's start there. Okay, just a couple things with this. In this section too, I think we kind of said this, is you're going to have to deal in your heart with cultural values. You're going to have to wrestle through those things. Success, stewardship, because we God doesn't talk a whole lot about, which we're going to get into. He doesn't talk a whole lot about saving money so that you can live comfortably. You just don't find it in Scripture. You can look. If you do find it, great. We'll do another core values class on. But you find a whole lot about being careful to not go there. He ties it into the favoritism. The problem with the favoritism, the problem with leaning towards the rich, is you cannot do that without excluding, diminishing, neglecting the poor. Mm-hmm. You can't do it. And it could be as simple as, let's say you do a fundraiser, and you really want to bring in the big, the powerful, the guy, the people who are going to write big checks. So you get a really swank place, right? And
the gym.
Really good food. Now, what's going to happen? Well, no, that's why we do it in the gym. But if you get, I don't know what's a really swank place in St. Louis.
Hilton.
The Hilton, the Chase Park, whatever. $100 a plate to come and do this. Well, who's not going to show up at that? I mean, it excludes. And even if you say, well, we'll buy you a plate, it's like, I don't have the clue. No. I'm going to feel so out of place here. So out of place. And so that's part of God's, this kind of driving concern is, that's not me. That's never my heart. That's not the way that I come. I invite the rich, absolutely. But I invite them to come and I invite them down.
Come to a potluck.
Yeah, I invite them down. And if they're willing to humble themselves, they're actually going to find, they're going to find true life in it. What happened, it's addressing kind of, this is a heart tendency. My trying to position myself next to the wealthy, the envy, kind of given, going there, thinking those things. It really is a means of trying to dodge the painful trials that I'm in. or just, skirt around them a little bit, soften it. At least I've got a paycheck. That's, I can sleep at night now. I got that. All right. But what it doesn't mean, and this comes from the original stuff, it doesn't mean that you can't enjoy good gifts from God. He says that right at the beginning. Every good gift is from the Lord. He's not here to play games. And it does not mean that you should not make financially sound or responsible decisions. The minute you say that, it becomes there's a tug of war. Okay, what is fiscal responsibility really mean and look like? All right, we're going to move on here. Chapter 2, verse 14, this is faith in deeds. Here's another pitfall to avoid when we ask for wisdom. thinking that a theological understanding of mercy is the same as living a life of mercy towards others. reading lots of books and teaching a class on it and going to a church that is all about justice and mercy and singing the songs is not the same thing as sharing your bread, sharing your time with people who are in need. And it's just a good, all right, Lord, you know, not in a let's judge each other, or, but God, can you am I actually free to live this stuff out? And you know when it's, oh man, I'm just so consumed with just trying to get through, just trying to survive. I don't have time for, you know, stopping and taking care. That was the whole point, wasn't it, of the Good Samaritan? Who is my neighbor? All right, Jesus, who am I supposed to love? Well, he's right in front of you. And this is the wisdom that I'm giving. You're asking, Lord, I'm in trouble. What should I do? Okay. Ask God to open your eyes to what's right in front of you. And take a step of freely loving. Kind of put this in here. It's not enough. He says this. It's not merely enough to say, I'm going to try to avoid a self-serving life. I'm going to stay away from all those bad things that are pitfalls. It's kind of that, you know, that Jesus says, I think it's in Luke, when a man has an evil spirit, they drive the spirit out, and it goes out for a while, and then it comes back, and it finds the house swept clean and empty. And I think that, you know, what is he talking, and empty? Well, you got rid of the bad stuff, but you didn't fill it with the good stuff. Lord, your fruit, what you're calling me to. Walking these things out. It's just, you know, James, he makes it very focused on how practical. Walk your faith out in deeds of mercy and kindness and love. This is a critical part of getting yourself out of trials. Okay, we're going to take a 10-15 minute break, get water, stretch, and then we'll...
There is decaf coffee.
All right.
We have a cookie or this.
Oh, goodness. Thank you, Jerry.
What page are you on?
And this?
I eat a cookie.
Well, I went all over. This was...
See, I'm writing on my notes on the first page. Like,
Do you have the sheet I gave you?
I will cough on that. I'll try to get another sheet besides this one.
You this one?
Yes.
Yeah, there is.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Do you have an extra single one? He said, I love that man. And then he went, I mean, I really like him a lot.
What's not the love? Well,
here's a challenge for you, and I have no idea what Lord has on your plate this month. He is leaving for a place called His Mansion in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be leaving the 10th of May. We're driving him up there. He has this 4 weeks to really finish strong here and get ready to get up. I don't know where we're going.
It's going to open the fire hydrant again, and you can just take a drink. And, all right.
It makes me tired just looking at it.
Pray for my dog.
All right. We'll wait 1 second here. Now we'll get started, then they'll come in.
Yeah, we don't.
I did. This is all on there.
Fresh, I just got that.
All right. So we're going back into... So kind of picking up at chapter 3. I'm going to try to kind of real quick get through these last couple points here. Just another pitfall. These are so, for me, and I think if you take time, these are so common kind of issues that kind of surface when we're in trials. But this next one really has to do with self-righteousness, and the kind that's expressed in how we talk about other people and treat other people, how we handle conflict with other people. And that's very appropriate for when you're in trial. Is it cursing that you're doing? Coming out of your mouth? Is there boasting? If you kind of think you tie these two things together, hey, you should tame the tongue, be careful what you say, and then there's this kind of boasting about what you're going to do. Yeah, I'm going to carry out business here and there, and it's really when you start, and I'm guilty, 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 as you start assessing things and making plans like God is not here in the day-to-day. You know, I know, I don't need to ask God about this. I know. This one's obvious. You know, you're an idiot. I don't need to pray about that. That's the problem. You know, yeah, I got common sense. You know, you're acting completely irrational, and this, no, I don't need to pray about this. Look, this is we live in a capitalistic, yeah, society. This is a no-brainer. If we want this thing to float, you gotta go out and make money. And there's a couple factors to have to consider, and just go do that. And you know, in a good way, James kind of says, okay, you gotta watch that. And a good place to see it is what's coming out of your mouth. This kind of this phrase in here that's interesting, the boasting. Let me see if I can find it here. In the two kinds of wisdom. Who's wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. And that sounds pretty harsh, but that's, you know, come on, James, you're just being real. You know, yeah, bitter envy. You know what really burns me up?
What chapter, verse are you on?
This is James chapter 3, verse 13. You know what really gets me going is how unfair it is that this person doesn't have to work as hard as I am and is getting X, Y, you know, look at that. Just, okay? So, yeah. That's boast. That's bitter envy. That's boasting about bitter envy. Very, very practically. You know what? This person who's in charge is a complete moron, and all of this mess is because they won't, you know, do this. I mean, it's just James just says, okay, hey,
stop it.
That's not wisdom. That's not wisdom. You ask for wisdom. I'm trying to put this for you. Here's what wisdom is. First of all, it's pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. And then you got to throw this in. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. It's very practical. How are you handling conflict? Are you talking to are you running your mouth about, you know, how bad this person is and that person is, and how if you had the chance you would do it this way, and or do you work for peace? Hey guys, look, I'm entering in. I'm going to proclaim the gospel. I mean, this is Paul. This is how you know it's not just James, because Paul basically does the same thing about the full armor of God. I mean, it's all around our view of God's love for sinners and the grace that he gives, and how practical that's supposed to be in the battle, in the struggle that we're going through. So watching that, watching what comes out of our mouth. And then he goes right, and I'm not going to, because we've already kind of hammered this, but he ends kind of flowing into chapter 5, really starting in verse 4, chapter 4, the desires, the battles, the things that, you know, that are going on inside you. It's really self-indulgence or the love of money. And he kind of hits this directly. Look, this is a natural reaction to trial. You gotta address this and guard your heart from going there. He uses, you know, who doesn't want the accumulation of wealth, luxurious living, and self-indulgence, right? I mean, who doesn't want that, really? All sounds wonderful. all sounds wonderful. But the warning is, hey, this is not my kingdom. It's not the way it gets expressed.
So see, the trap of that for me is I can look at what my self-indulgence in going for what I want as not as indulgent as the rich and the famous up here, and so it's easy to rationalize, right. Well, that's not that bad, and just this much
right.
bad, and so
right.
there's a challenge wherever you are financially to say, do I need to downgrade a bit? Do I need to
yep.
think about what I could get rid of to help
mm-hmm.
the widow
mm-hmm.
and the orphan? And
yeah. Yeah. I mean, Timothy, Paul addresses its issue of contentment.
Mm-hmm.
Are you know, you learn godliness with contentment is a great gain. And let me just put this in very, I mean, he does, it is economic. It's not, that's not just an example of godliness with contentment. It's all, it's the world I created. There's the need for money and the need for resources, and that's not separated from this stuff. Contentment. Learn contentment. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's a heart issue of before the Lord. Yeah, God, I'm waiting on you. I'm going to learn to be content, to trust you, to walk with you in these things. It is, and you know, he ties this in again. The accumulation of the wealth, luxurious living, self-indulgence is oppressive to the poor. It's not, you have to be careful if you're doing those things that you don't accidentally become oppressive. You're going to be oppressive if that is what your heart is going after and what you're doing. Now, for me, one of the things in this that's the challenge is in our church culture, you can change those words, and it's, you know, it's the little point above that. It looks like good vision. You know, just, hey, you're just a good, driven person, driven for success. You know, that's, what's wrong with that? And so just having to be careful how you, just checking your heart.
Where is that in the chapter as far as accumulation being oppressive to the poor?
The wages, look, the way, it's 6-6, but 5-1, let's see, 5-3. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workmen who mowed your fields are crying out against you. You don't make money like that without somebody busting their rear end. And, I mean, you don't. Because if you did, everybody would be, you know, the guys that bust their tails would be stinking rich too, and they're not. they're barely making it.
Out here mowing your lawn.
Yeah, but somebody's living nice. So yeah, you can't do this.
Which verses did you just read?
That was James 5,
3-6.
Yep. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You fatten yourselves in the day of slaughter. You've condemned and murdered innocent men who were not opposing you. Obviously, you're sitting there in this church going, me? I didn't kill anybody. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I'm just trying to run a business. You know, golly.
I find myself, even though I have a lot, sitting here thinking, oh, well, he's talking about people wealthier than me, so I don't have to worry. But then I kind of reassess where I am compared to most, and I think that does apply to me.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, this is, again, it's not wonderfully, I mean, James hits it right in the middle of this, you know, hey, mercy triumphs. And right before this one, he's getting right to the heart of desire. He's talking about this battle, these desires that battle in you. He offers this incredible kind of, here's where you go. Humble yourselves before the Lord. Change your laughter to mourning. Draw near to God, he'll draw near to you. Purify your hearts, wash your hands, and he's going to respond mm-hmm. and lift you up. I mean, so there's an incredible invitation that's not, it's not just I'm blasting you, you know, now go, you know, go change, just go do something different. It's hey, I'm going to address the heart and I'm going to invite you in to learn from me what it is I actually do want, what this righteousness actually looks like. Incredible invitation. Ends here, just 5:7-20. Really, what I thought, you know, this is kind of just like the reset button. He tells you how to hit the reset button over and over and over when you're going. And it's just these two things. One is patience in the midst of suffering. You know, don't run after all this other stuff. Learn patience in the midst of suffering. Ask God for it. And then this incredible closing. Pray. Whatever this stuff is, pray on all occasions. Pray if you're sick, if someone sinned, if you're hurting, if you're hungry, pray. And just kind of to draw that out, the two things. Prayer is, it's fellowship kind of in two directions. It's definitely with God who hears and comforts and sends his spirit, but it's also with brothers and sisters who hear and comfort, and God stirs their hearts to enter in. I mean, there's this admonition. Here's my wisdom. Pray. Fellowship with the Lord. Fellowship with one another around this. And, you know, if you see this as a deepening, okay, God, I keep kind of going through the circle here of all these places that are challenged and stuff. It gets me right back to, as I'm praying, right back to the beginning of James, humbly accept the word which was preached to you, the good news. You know, the word is, hey, I'm here to set you free from worry and anxiety. I mean, you start thinking in terms of just very practical, the Sermon on the Mount. Don't chase after your food. Don't worry about it. That seems very okay. If that was to a middle class church or a middle class group, okay, yeah, I need to stop worrying about this stuff because, you know, I've got plenty and I got to stop obsessing. But that's not who he was speaking to. He's speaking to subsistence people living day to day. Hey, you're free to not worry and chase after this. You're free to pursue the kingdom and watch God provide. That's crazy. Okay, God, humbly accept the word planted in me, which can save me. I see how you're going to pull me out of the trial. You're not going to pull me out of it. You're just going to set me free to be confident of your presence and your love and your kingdom purposes in it. And that's the maturing process. So I'm going to stop there. And if any comments or questions, or we got folks with lots of experience with this stuff. Yes, experience with trials. And
which way do we want to go on this? Kathy gave me some wisdom that she doesn't remember. So the Lord spoke through her, but I was talking about taking trials, you know, day by day, step by step, and she said, moment by moment. Mm-hmm. So true. One moment at a time, you can make it through anything. But you start taking a footstep even, or a day at a time. You start planning. That's where all these types go down. Very helpful. Mm-hmm.
Good. All right. So you just go out. We got it, huh? We got this one down.
No problem.
Yeah.
Well, we know what we're supposed to do.
Get back to the beginning. It says, count on the Lord when you need.
Yeah.
Which immediately strikes that vision of, okay, you come through, so be prepared. And when you see that trial, walk up and shake it by the hand and say, nice to meet you.
Did just a curiosity, did anybody grow up in a church that didn't address this at all, or that it was a very opposite? You did?
Yeah.
Well,
it was more detached. You know, the feeling was that, you know, we go to church, and it was a PCUSA church, but it was a, you know, we go to church on Sunday, we're faithful, we get to put the money in the plate that we're supposed to put in the plate, we've met our obligations almost, you know, we're good, you know, and so, you know, it was a comfortable place for people who had accumulated wealth to be and feel like they met whatever obligation that they, that, you know, because there was no push, there was no messy, there was no, you know, of course you'd never air your dirty laundry there either, you know, it was a very, you know, small town. It was safe and easy, you know. And that's part of where the path of least resistance kind of thing, you know, kind of came from. Because, you know, we're blessed. We don't have to be messy. You know, we're good.
I was taught not to pray for patience.
Not to pray for patience.
Never pray for patience because tribulation will come. And I mean, so dead serious.
If you pray for patience, tribulation will come?
Absolutely. Never pray for it.
And don't read James either, right?
No.
Stay away from that book. Don't pray.
They didn't pray on James. And they were prayer warriors and people who sacrificed a lot and lived a lot of this. But there was a fear of the trials, a fear that God might hear you ask for it and answer your prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so.
It's not a welcoming though. Just this comfortable familiarity with trials, of course. I think when you read a lot of military biographies, we marvel at people who persevere through the most extraordinary circumstances. We see those as heroes. But don't imagine that they're ordinary people and what they're doing is exactly what we ought to be doing in our somewhat different trials, but the response should be quite similar. You say, what else would I expect? Bad things happen to people every day. Why not to me? And that sounds completely strange to have that. There's an opening chapter back here in one of Mark Labyrinth's books, The Dangerous Act of Loving Your Neighbor. And his whole chapter one starts off with a story of an elderly woman with her silver hair on her way to Joy Club. And she didn't show up one day because she was kidnapped on her way there. Someone jumped into her car, held a gun to her head, made her go to different ATMs and empty out everything until the daily matches. And she got kind of beat up and bruised, etc. And the pastor's trying to comfort her with an awful thing. And she said, well, yes, it's true, it's a bad thing, but what about this young man who's a drug addict and what he's going through? And, yes, but look what you went through. And she said, bad things happen to people every day. Why not me? And he's just astonished. I mean, the pastor needs somebody to put him back together as she's ministering her understanding that the God who was good to her would also be good to him.
Right.
And she wants to advocate on his behalf. She told the guy before he let her go, you know, you will get caught, and I'm looking forward to being there and pleading with the judge to put you in a really good treatment program because this is no way to live. And she wants to help him. But she's astonishing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons he starts the book with her. But it seems so crazy that we would.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't bad things happen to me? Why should I expect that my kids will turn out perfect? Why should I think that my health will always be good? Why should I think the bad things will happen? Things break.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things break. People break. The weeds grow in every garden since the Garden of Eden.
Yeah.
But
But I don't think our practical expressions of the faith handed on to us prepare us very well at all for the reality of the world. And then there's this clash. We don't know mm-hmm. what we fear doesn't help us deal with it, what we go home with at night.
I think there's a lot of Christianity. There's a lot of things spoken in the name of Christianity that make us feel that when we're going through trials that we're a bunch of losers.
Mm-hmm.
So not experiencing
right.
the blessing of
right.
quote unquote the blessing of God. Which is, if, when you read the scripture, especially James and, you know, Romans 5 and those passages, they're giving you a completely different message. That, and, you know, I would say from practical experience that when the time comes, you know, I look at, you know, you read those stories about missionaries and you think, I could never do that. I could never face that. But honestly, I don't need the grace to face that right now because that's not what I'm facing. But when
right.
the time comes,
right.
the grace will be there. I mean, it's not that we're, you know, we're neither heroes or losers. We're people who walk in the grace of God.
That's right.
And when we need the grace of God, the grace of God will be there to enable us to face
mm-hmm.
whatever difficulties that we're going to face. I'm not saying it's going to be easy.
Right.
There will be a grace, and by God's grace, when we come out of that, we'll have a deeper and richer understanding
mm-hmm.
of who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the challenge with the missionary stories is I disconnect from it's my child that's just really hard to love, and I'm constantly disciplining or has got learning disabilities, and this is the last thing I want to do on a Friday night is deal with this, or it's I signed a contract to do a house and there's another contractor there that's a real jerk and doesn't care at all about whether he cursed my guys out or not. And all I want to do is get the heck away from that job and move on. And I don't go into those things necessarily saying, okay, God, here. This is the place to learn this. Yeah, yeah. You know, my car broke down. God, this is not I don't accept this as a trial. This is just, I gotta do this better. Doggone it. You know, but I mean, that's the, we miss the nose on our face, you know,
sure.
I mean, too often. It's just.
What if our instinctual question, I mean, what if we're disciples to ask the question, and probably ask it 80 times a day, but Lord, can you use this, even this, to make me more like Jesus?
Yeah.
Can you work? In
yeah.
this, even this, to bring blessing or increase your glory
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
before
yep.
the witnesses are.
Yep.
Can you use even this and keep offering it right back to you?
Yep.
What would be the difference if we could approach our day and the 80 things that will happen on Monday
yep.
with that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole pick. That's Jesus' whole ministry in life is. If you really think about where he spent his time, I mean, touching leper colonies and mixing mud with spit and putting it on the eyes of blind people. I mean, it's just they are so marginal, off the map. They're going to have no. I don't care if you did heal his eyes. He is not going to impact anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a power broker. He's got no wealth. He's got no. No one's going to invite him to give a testimony at the synagogue or whatever, because they're too busy kicking him out for. But that's where with confidence, Jesus said, "No, I'm actually going to turn this whole world upside down in these things." And that's the Lord, help us not to miss it. All right, it's 6:30. We're good.
Yeah,
we did on time.
Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.